And home of a little off the record, on the record, with Mr. Joe Campolo, ladies and gentlemen, managing partner of the great firm CMM Campolo Middleton & McCormick, a Forbes, by the Forbes, top corporate law firm in this country, only 1% actually get into that category for all of your business needs. Call the great CMM Campolo Middleton of course, 631-738-9100, with their three locations, of course, right here in Ronkonkoma. Also, Riverhead, let's not forget Nassau County with Westbury, the aforementioned Mr. Campolo. Joseph, how are you, sir?
Jake, good morning. Good morning. How are you?
Doing okay? Everything okay? The winter, the weather, you're getting through it?
You know, I just got back yesterday. I was in Florida for a little bit. And I got to tell you, it's a bummer coming back here. Just got to tell you, there's no way around it.
January, February, man, that's what it is. That is what it is. It's just so, you know, you get through February, you get March, you know, might get a little storm. Listen, I've seen them in April too, but you know, then we get the nice stuff coming in April, May. You know, nothing nicer. Lots of stuff going on here. Lots of stuff. I don't even know where to begin. You know, I mean, we could begin with, I'll tell you one thing. I'd like to begin with the president, Joe. He's going to do a press conference later on today, around 4 o'clock or so. You know, it's kind of, from what we hear, it's kind of a reset button for this guy, you know. Needs to change his image, needs to get out there more. Listen, I'll believe when I see it, when I see some of the questioning and everything else that will come into play later. But it's been an absolute disaster. I mean, I don't think there has been a worse first year of a term in the history of this country than what we're seeing here out of the 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. There are so many things to address. I just hope the questions will not be scripted. But this is only going to be press conference number 10, hard to believe, to mark the one-year deal of his first one in office. I want to see and hear this thing. You know, there's a lot to uncover here. I want to see some tough questions. You know, border, inflation. I mean, forget the voting rights stuff. Give me something on the. How are we going to curb inflation? Right now, everybody is hurting. Okay, same money being brought home, that doesn't adjust. But yet, we're going to be paying $4 a gallon very soon. You know, you go to a restaurant now. Again, it's a $100 bill. Two or three people with you. We're in an average restaurant, right? Nothing crazy. I want to know how he's going to attack. Are we still doing Build Back Better? Really? Spend more? Get, you know, I mean, I don't get it. I want to hear what this guy has to say, but those questions got to be coming here. Should be interesting today, later.
Yeah, you can't have a bigger contrast between two presidencies than, you know, than that of Donald Trump and that of Joe Biden. I mean, I'm not really sure who's been advising President Biden, but to me, it's just been a PR nightmare. I mean, not having him answer direct questions, having him sit at a White House prop. I mean, what is that all about? They build the stage to look like that he's sitting in the White House. I don't even understand the optics of it all. And you know, We're coming out of presidency where all day, every day, good, bad, ugly, indifferent, nobody really wondered what was on Donald Trump's mind. Donald Trump didn't shy away from a single question, didn't shy away from a single answer, was incredibly inflammatory. But, you know, at least when you look at it just from a historical perspective of the office of the presidency, at least the American people understood who and what the president of the United States was as a person and what they stood for, and that they had an understanding of the issues, and the American people could decide whether they agreed or disagreed. I think the shame and the challenge, and you know, this is really just remarkable to watch. The decline. The first time I ever paid attention to Joe Biden was the Clarence Thomas, Anita Hill hearings. And, you know, it was a while ago, of course, but Joe Biden was a firecracker. Boy, he was he was lively and really a very strong leader. But, you know, like him or don't like him, those hearings were tough. He was very opinionated. You never had to worry about what was on Joe Biden's mind all through that time. And that got him to be, you know, vice president and ultimately president. But what a shame, you know, that his advisors are handling him this way. I mean, the best speech I saw Joe Biden give was on January 6th when he was talking about, you know, the events a year ago, January 6th. I didn't happen to agree with everything that he was saying, but I thought that he was at least being presidential. He was being a leader. He got through his speech and he was forceful about it. And, you know, people want to see that. They want leadership. I mean, we have huge, huge economic crises. So, Jay, you know, this is the third calendar year of COVID now. Third calendar year. And if you go all the way back to March, April of 2020, when you and I first started talking about COVID, it was all about how are the dominoes going to fall? How are the economic dominoes going to fall? Right? And here we're seeing the tsunami. So COVID's the volcano that erupted, and now we're seeing the aftermath and the tsunami waves coming to crash. Inflation is killing us, and there doesn't seem to be any end in sight to that. You know, that's going to increase interest rates. We're going to have a whole challenge going forward. We're seeing market start. People are talking about corrections. We're seeing cryptocurrencies start to decline, and people aren't sure where those are going to, you know, to go. And we need some confidence. We need some confidence. So, you know, he has some really good advisors around him. You know, and he's putting the right people, I think, on the Federal Reserve Board to try and help get some economic calmness. But, you know, the economy is irrational, and the economy is built on human beings reacting to whatever news they're getting that day. And a president's job, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, is to try and bring some confidence and some certainty to the economy, to the world stage, to national security. So whoever his advisors are, I mean, we kind of joke around about it, but just imagine China and Russia looking at our president sitting sitting in a White House prop, trying to make him appear strong. What message is that even sending the world economy or the world national security forces? He's got to say, stop it, man. Let me be who I am, and let me do what I got to do. We need that. We need our president to really get out of whatever it is he thinks he needed to do and just start being the president and start being a real human being who's going to answer questions that are on the minds of Americans, because there's a lot of uncertainty going on right now, Jay, and we need leadership.
Well, you know, the best speech I heard him was October. You know, it was a last October, actually October before he took the reins. Okay, really, October 2020, because, you know, everything he has. I mean, it sounded good then. You know, it sounded good, but everything he said, he's flip flopped. Look what he's done on the mandates, for crying out loud. Thank goodness the Supreme Court, we'll get into that later, you know, made the right move here. But everything this guy has done, he has reversed, which is that of a typical politician. Joe Biden is nothing more than a typical politician, a 50-year politician. And he has accomplished nothing in his first year of office. Not one thing you could pinpoint as far as how. I mean, the only thing he did right was pick Kamala Harris, because she's worse than he is, as far as the numbers, as far as what the American people think. You can't get lower on the scale at this point in time. Everything. In fact, Democrats are switching parties right now, according to the latest Gallup poll, from what I read. I mean, that's how bad it is. And if you're not recognizing the problems going on, we got a drug problem here with fentanyl. How do you think the fentanyl is coming in, folks? What do you think? You think maybe at the border with 2 million encounters over the last year? I mean, if we can't at least acknowledge the problems, then we've got nothing, you know? And that's why I have zero confidence in this guy. Yeah, the shots are being called by folks like Susan Rice and Ron Klain and others. This guy is nothing more than a puppet. I mean, to have the windows, a computer-generated I don't get it. What, was snow outside? I don't get it. The computer-generated stuff. I can't figure it out.
It's weird. It's really just weird to me. I don't understand. I don't understand how foolish they think the American public is. I mean, if who is he trying to connect with? That's the thing about Joe Biden. So you look at him, and in his first year, you know, and all presidents are typically given a honeymoon period. He had, you know, he had three big pieces of legislation that he wanted to pass: the infrastructure spending, Build Back Better, and the voting rights legislation. All things he wanted to make sure he passed while he had control of the Senate and the House. He's one for three. I mean, he's one for three. The other two are dead. They're just not going to happen. And it's his own party. It's his own party, and their sense that he's just out of touch with Americans right now. He's just out of touch with Americans, and that is a shame to me, because anybody who, again, you don't have to agree with people's policies or not people's policies, but Joe Biden, for his entire career in the U.S. Senate, was from Delaware fighting for workers, workers' rights, laborers, all very, very strong, always had a reputation of being completely in touch and lockstep with middle America, middle class America, right? And here he is struggling to find a core base that can support him. And I think it's just because of his staff and really, really bad advice. I think they're scared to death of what this guy will say if he goes unmiked. I think they're scared to death of the media, because they know, you know, how aggressive the media was towards Donald Trump. And, you know, it's Donald Trump's presidency completely changed the press conferences and the way the media interacts with the president now, in a way that was incredibly, incredibly belligerent and disrespectful. And many could say Donald Trump had it coming, but it really, if you look at it from a historical perspective, you know, the way press conferences were held and the way reporters interacted with the president pre-Donald Trump was totally different. That's completely changed now. They're free-for-alls, and I think they're just scared to death of having the president answer questions from the media, and that's not right. That's our president. That's the guy. You know, that's the guy who pushes the button if the button needs to be pushed. We need to know what he's thinking. We need to know who he is. And it's really been a shame. So I'm hoping, I guess it's a long way of answering your initial question, Jay. I'm really hoping that Joe Biden said, enough. Enough's enough. I need to connect with the American people. I need to talk to them. They need to know who I am. They need to know what I'm thinking, and stop handling me is what I hope is happening. But I'm not hopeful.
Actions speak louder than words, Joe. I'll tell you that much. You know, a quarter of his presidency has been spent on the beaches of Delaware. I'm tired of him, you know, throwing a frisbee to a major or commando, whoever the name of the damn dog is. You know what? This guy needs to get back in the office and fix these problems, right? I don't need to have him go down to Georgia and do Jim Crow 2.0. I don't want him insulting the American people regarding racism. Enough is enough. I'll tell you, enough is enough, really. This guy has got to make some change. He has to. He's going to be a one-term wonder on the wrong side of things. That's it. And that's why, you know, you look at the name of Hillary Clinton. That's why that name is resurfacing now. That's the only hope. It's hard to believe. That's how bad the Democratic Party is now, Joe. Hillary Clinton is being resurfaced as a run in 2024. And that, I really believe, is going to happen. I really believe it. Because she senses what everybody senses what's going on here. There is no hope. I mean, you're going to pin your hopes on a Gavin Newsom? I mean, really? Are you going to pin your hopes on Pete Buttigieg? Man, Pete, I don't think so. And the only saving grace for that party is, it's hard to believe, but Hillary Clinton's name. Hillary, you're going to hear more about Hillary Clinton. And I really believe she's going to be
candidate. I really hope that's just fodder. I really do. I mean, I think we need, you know, younger, more thoughtful leadership who is going to really understand the world, where the world's going, and how the United States needs to continue to be a leader, you know, through this. We need fresh ideas. And, you know, so let's, if you look at, Jay, if you just look at our lifetime in modern history, we've gone through, you know, through two Bushes, you know, all the machine, Bushes, Clinton, you know, but for Barack Obama, and it's so interesting to me, you know, I was just thinking this the other day about Barack Obama, right? Here the guy ascended to the presidency, you know, so incredibly quickly, and really energized and polarized the world, for his story and rising to presidency, and he's completely disappeared since he's been out of office. The guy's completely disappeared. I mean, he's made $100 million or so doing whatever it is he does, his talks, his books, and everything else, and that guy's checked out. He's in a mansion on Martha's Vineyard. He's got a mansion in D.C., and man, oh man, he just has totally checked out. And I said, what a story. What a story that guy was able to do, right? He got his time was done. And he's just living his life. And I wish these career politicians who can't let it go, I don't hear about Trump versus Hillary. It'd be the worst thing for the country for Trump versus Hillary 2024. It might be good on the WWE, you know, to see them in a ring, and you can get Mr. T and Hulk Hogan in there with them. But for solving, you know, the problems that a country has, for uniting a country in such a turbulent world, that would be the worst thing that could happen to this country right now.
Let me ask you, at this point in time, would you not like to have Donald Trump back in play here after you've seen this first year? I mean, Trump, and listen, with all the faux pas of this guy, right? And we know why he lost. We know why. I don't even know he's going to run again because of all the legal problems that could exist with him. We'll see. That's another conversation. But in essence, at this point in time, would you rather have a guy like Donald Trump sitting in that Oval Office rather than Joe Biden at this point in time? Honestly,
I'd rather have a leader. I mean, early in Trump's presidency, early on in Trump's presidency, you know, Trump was getting things done. The later Donald Trump, the insurrectionist Donald Trump, that Donald Trump I don't want to ever see in the presidency again. This country does not need that sort of divisiveness. But, you know, early Donald Trump, let's roll the tapes back 30 seconds and remember. So Donald Trump came in aggressive with a lot of ideas, a lot of economic ideas, and they were good policies. They were really, really good policies. But, you know, he really got kneecapped by this nonsense about Russian collusion and Comey setting him up and the independent prosecutor investigating him and all this nonsense that was designed just to kneecap him, because they knew that what he was coming out with were bold new ideas about how to take America to the next level economically and on the world stage, and they didn't want it. They didn't want him succeeding. So it was an all-out blitz of resist, media attack, and then kneecap him with this nonsense about Russian collusion, right? That Donald Trump, though, as arrogant and belligerent and distasteful as a person he may have been to people, that guy had the right policies for America. And he said it. He said it, and I've never heard another president say it, and he said it. He said, either we're a country or we're not. And as long as we're a country, my job is to protect our border. My job is to make sure we're having, you know, free trade at fair terms, that we're not subsidizing countries that are not contributing to the overall good of the world, not just our country. He was saying things that everybody understood and agreed with. But because of all the political nonsense and the kneecapping and the Russian collusion and this and that, I think it really turned him into a very, very negative, vengeful person. And I don't want to see that negative, vengeful person in the presidency at all. I want to see those original policies he had, someone who can move those forward. I'll tell you this, if Joe Biden had gone into the White House and not changed any of the economic policies or immigration policies with Donald Trump, he would be hailed as one of the most progressive, innovative, amazing worldwide leaders there is, because the policies were right under Trump. It's just that the messenger wasn't.
Listen, 100%. I mean, he unraveled everything Trump did that was good. Why? Because of Donald Trump. The hatred that existed. Joe Biden wanted no part of anything Trump touched, regardless. Border, stay in Mexico policy, was that bad? Joe, see, could somebody ask him that question this afternoon? Stay in Mexico policy, was it that bad? We got fentanyl coming in here like Swiss cheese. Is it that bad? You know, I mean, the economics, would we have the type of inflation right now if Trump were around? No. Would we have the pipelines in play that weren't disbanded, Keystone and others? No. Would we be drilling in Alaska? Yes. Would we be begging OPEC and Russia? No. You know what I'm saying? This is the problems that exist. You see, they didn't like Trump because he was a rebel. That's what it was. They hated him. The Schumers, Pelosi's, and company. They hated him because of the way he went about his business. Okay, he was a runaway horse out of a barn. But he got things right. Now listen, we know he got a lot of things wrong. Did he handle COVID down the stretch? No. That's why he's sitting in Mar-a-Lago right now. But in essence, he handled things improperly. Joe Biden had a chance, if he was an actual president, making decisions the right way, instead of relying on the Rices and the Clains. And yeah, I'll even say Obama. You want to know where Obama is? He's somewhere feeding information to this guy, I'll tell you that much. Tough deal. Joe can't pull off the record on the record. Go ahead, buddy. Finish up.
You know, Jay, it just as an example, you know, because I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone a lot, right? And this issue, and it's a little off center, but it's right on the point. This issue of New York City is going to allow non-citizens to vote in municipal elections. Non-citizens to vote in municipal elections. To me, that seems bizarre. So you don't have to be a U.S. citizen, but you're allowed to vote in elections for elected officials who are going to be representatives of the city and municipalities. I can't imagine anything more bizarre that's occurring. It would be like, you know, allowing somebody who rents your condo for a week to be able to go to HOA meetings and vote. I mean, it's just insane to me, right? And that's what I mean. Either we're a country or we're not. Either things have meaning or they don't. Right, but it's a constant grab for votes, and that I think is the biggest tension right now. So the Republicans do it differently. Listen, the Republicans are not innocent in all of this, right? The Republicans gerrymander and they try to redistrict states and cities so to get more Republican voters in their districts. You know, that's the way that they do it. And the Democrats mobilize differently. The Democrats do it by allowing non-citizens to vote. They do it by allowing, you know, very, very liberal write-in ballots, very, very liberal ways of making sure people can vote who normally would not vote, which I'm not opposed to. It's just tactics that both parties use to gain a base. But could you ever imagine, when you asked about Donald Trump, could you ever imagine Donald Trump saying, you know what, I'm going to allow undocumented and illegal aliens to vote in elections here in the United States? No, it's so out of touch with what American people think and understand and believe. Why should somebody who's not even paying taxes decide how my tax dollars are going to be spent? It's bizarre to me. And that's just the place we find ourselves in.
Why he's having a press conference today. That's why his advisors, who are ever calling the shot, says, you know what, Joe, we're going to prop you up there at 4 o'clock. You're going to say a couple of things and answer a few questions. You know, in fact, you know what? We're going to actually allow Fox News to answer two questions. Ask two questions. No, not one. We'll get two in from Peter Ducey. So they're going to try and revision a little bit of a makeover, but it's meaningless to me. It's meaningless because, you see, actions speak louder than words. And I want to know how he's going to fix the inflation. And let me tell you, Marty Cantor on the other day, right? It's about policy. Policies change the course of mighty rivers. And Biden, if he wants to do that, can flip this. Do you have confidence? I don't. I really don't. There's no end in sight to this. There really is. All right, let's get through a couple other things. Yeah. Finish that thought. Go ahead. And we'll move on.
I was going to say he doesn't have support. The challenge is his number one cheerleader in CNN has turned on him. So you mentioned Fox News, and okay, you know, there's no doubt that Fox News and Joe Biden are going to be at odds, but when you have your number one network that helped you get elected in CNN now turning on you, that's the challenge that Joe Biden has, and he doesn't have support in the Senate. So, listen, I vote on America. I support our president 100%. Go, Joe, go. I need you to do something big here. It's just that, I'm not sure he's got enough gas left in the tank, Jay.
Joe, he's not fit for office. And listen, I want to give this guy a chance. He's the president. He's my president right now. I want to give him a chance. I don't like this. I hate talking about him. I'm sick of talking about him, of his failures. I really am. I don't want to do it. But what am I supposed to do? I can't sugarcoat it. It's an absolute disaster. What else can you say? Now, listen, Eric Adams came before the cameras yesterday, did a little bit of reversal regarding the subways and everything else. Doesn't feel safe. You know, he felt safe a couple of weeks, and now he doesn't feel safe. The latest, that young lady that was pushed onto the tracks. You know, I spoke about this young lady out in California at the store, you know, stabbed. Why? Who knows? From a guy with a rap sheet. Forget it. You know, he goes, I saw a mugshot of him 12 different times. This Sean Laval Smith out in L.A., this 31-year-old, who stabbed this young lady, Brianna Kupfer, to death. I mean, it's unbelievable. And he's on the loose. They got his name, $250,000 reward. Hopefully, I think they'll get him today. But still, why is an individual like Sean Laval Smith walking the streets? And now Eric Adams recognizes that our subways are not safe. You know, he saw a couple of crack addicts, sees a lot of homeless. What are you going to do about it, man? You see, that's the problem here. And you look at the DA in Manhattan, in Alvin Bragg, who has now hired some crisis management team, you know, to kind of fix things about himself. You know, a little bit of a makeover, public relations, because it's been a disaster for Alvin Bragg. But you get a sense of the pattern here, Joe. You know, we look at homicides all over the country, Philly, with Krasner and Gascon there in L.A. and Boudin in San Fran and Kim Fox in Chicago. An all-star lineup here, but with a common denominator. And you know, it's not only about Soros and the funding here with a lot of these folks. Okay, I understand that, but their policies are costing lives. And that's the biggest problem. I want to see Eric Adams in action here. You know, restoring the anti-crime unit and everything else. I want to see what you're going to do, Mr. Mayor. I want to see what you're going to do, because we have a massive problem in the city right now with homeless, okay, with the homeless. And mental health is a major problem here as well. That insane, I didn't want to call him a human being, individual. You know, he's in the hospital right now. He's going to be read his rights today, or read his the indictment today, I guess, at the hospital. We got to do something about it, Joe. Go ahead.
Jay, you know, quick story. So when I was in law school, I went to Fordham Law, which is right around Lincoln Center, and I used to park at a parking garage down on Amsterdam. And, you know, classes would get out late, and I'd go get my car, and I'd go home. And there was a woman in my class, young woman in my class, and she was like, "Oh, good, you park in that garage in Amsterdam." And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Great, can you walk me to my car at night? Because I get very nervous going in there. I get very nervous walking down into that garage and everything else." And so at that moment, I realized, you know, how different perspectives are. Here I was, you know, a male, 6 foot male, 200 pounds. I wasn't nervous or scared at all. I would just walk to my car and go home. But then when I was walking with her, I could realize the perception of her and how different it is, how different her perception was and why she would feel nervous in that situation, right? And so that's Eric Adams, right? So here he is, New York City mayor, always surrounded by a police detail, former police officer, right? And his first comment is, oh, I don't feel nervous on the subways. Same as me walking along to a garage and then realizing, wait a minute, you know, I'm a mayor. I have armed details. I'm a police officer. I know how to handle myself. You know, everybody else isn't. We aren't. You know, all these elected officials that talk about how we should feel safe and everything else, they always have security details. We don't. I would not ride the subway right now. And most people would not. And now with all these headlines about this poor woman getting pushed, nobody's riding the subways. This mayor was so out of touch making that statement. Again, so out of touch. Okay, Jay, how did we get here? It's obvious how we got here. We had massive, massive defund the police riots where it was deemed acceptable to assault the police, where it was deemed acceptable to throw Molotov cocktails at them, where it was deemed acceptable to storm police headquarters. Okay, and we didn't call that an insurrection. We called that, the media was calling that peaceful protest. Well, it's ridiculous. This is what this is the next domino that's going to fall. If you're going to put out there defund the police, if you're going to put out there that the police are all corrupt, if you're going to put out there, you know, that you can get away with crimes, if you're going to put out in DA that we're not going to prosecute you for these crimes, what do they think is going to happen? What do we think is going to happen? Are we that ridiculous? Is anybody that surprised? Okay? We can't have this.
We got to get these people the hell out of office. I'm going to tell you right now, we got to get them out. There is no room for error here. Okay? I'm going to be on this all year. I hate to do it. I'm going to be on it all year. All year until November. Okay? I'm tired of talking about this stuff. I'm tired of reading. This young lady, a UCLA student, are you kidding me? What is she, 22? How old was she, 22? I mean, come on. Beautiful young lady. I saw the father on an interview yesterday. I mean, come on. Enough is enough. Joy, get Gus going out of there. Get him out.
Where is the outrage?
That's I'm sick of it.
Point.
I am tired of talking about this stuff. And right now, you know what? We need people in office who are going to do the job. That's why Ray Tierney's going to do the job in Suffolk County. No nonsense. Ray will prosecute, he will indict and incarcerate. And Ann Donnelly is going to do the same damn thing. Thank goodness. Todd Kominski lost by, what, 50,000 votes? I hope Todd understands the message on November 3rd. You were the architect of these flimsy laws, these bail reforms. Enough is enough. People have had this stuff. They're done. And I'm telling you, I will facilitate as much as I can from this job here, okay? And to try and get a message out, if you're not going to do your job, then get out! Joe, I am tired of talking about it. I tell you, really am.
And Jay, it's the problem with economic recovery, okay? New York City is bleeding. For the first time in a long time, Jay, Florida is outpacing New York in terms of total population. More people are fleeing from New York to Florida than anybody else in the world. Florida is now the third most populated state in the country. People are leaving New York in droves for a reason. They don't feel safe. They can't get their business restarted after COVID. Okay. I understand. I am totally in favor and I understand and I support. You know, sort of rethinking and redoing the way we're policing our inner cities. But you cannot make any change unless and until you are sure maximum safety exists for all citizens. And then you have to effectuate change there. You can't compromise safety. People don't feel safe. And that's just a reality of it. And how are they going to get Broadway reopened? Broadway shows let out late. And Carmine's and all these other restaurants are populated after these shows, and Times Square is alive after these shows with people partying and dancing and celebrating and having a great night out. Oh, he's doing that. Let me feel safe. You walked through Times Square recently? Totally different animal right now. So So how are we getting back to that? Got to be a police presence. People have to feel safe. You got to get these people under control, and you can't do it without force. You can't do it. I'm not going to feel safe on a subway unless I see a police officer on that subway. I'm not going to feel safe in Times Square unless I see police officers all over. It's just the way it is. People try and say, well, you're racist. I'm not. I'm a human being. I want to feel safe. That's just it.
Joe,
I don't feel safe.
I hear you, man.
Foot guy,
listen.
Former Marine, how is anybody else feeling safe?
Joe, I got out of a Billy Joel concert a couple of months ago, okay, and I tell the story all the time. There was not a soul around. I couldn't even find a freaking place to eat. You know, now you're going to McDonald's, you got to order on an app. You can't even go to the counter anymore. I mean, it's ridiculous. I was dying for a French fry, something. Nothing. Not a cop on the street. I walked 14 blocks looking for a place. I couldn't find anything to eat. Restaurants don't want to stay open. It's a ghost town in New York City after 11 o'clock. Ghost town. Not a cop to be found. Went down on the subway, three crack addicts. Could hardly get a Metro card through that thing in order to get on the platform safely. Finally, on the platform, hardly anyone there. No cops. Unbelievable. I tell you, it's a big problem. Huge problem. I got a lot of hope. At least I have to have a lot of hope for a guy like Eric Adams. Brooklyn Borough president, former cop, captain. Everybody loves him. You know, let's see. I want to see some change here. Don't pander left. Please, don't pander left. Recognize a problem. Problem needs to be fixed. Really does. All right, speaking of fixing, what about the governor? State of the state? Did we get snubbed here on the island? Did we get snubbed at MacArthur? You know, she put forth a budget yesterday. The schools, that looks okay. $31 billion going to the schools. But, you know, I mean, it sounds okay, but then again, Long Island's MacArthur Airport? Are we not a formidable airport? As far as recognition, Joe, what's the latest on that?
Jay, I was so disappointed in Governor Hochul's state of the state. And, you know, I think clearly there are certainly some good ideas that she has in there and certainly things that New York is going to need. But, you know, once again here, Long Island becomes the redheaded stepchild of the state. And I was disappointed because she has spent a lot of time here on Long Island as lieutenant governor. She got to know HALI really, really well. She got to know the Innovation Park and the importance of the Innovation Park to the region. And we had had several discussions with her as lieutenant governor about workforce development needs in the park, and she was very engaged and very interested in that. Additionally, just before the state, probably some of the most exciting news in the state and certainly in the region and certainly Long Island came out of the town of Islip with Supervisor Angie Carpenter's big win on getting Breeze Airways here to Long Island MacArthur Airport. And we've talked about it, Jay, but people do not realize how big of an accomplishment that is and that was. 2 years of investment by the town and the airport commissioner to get them here. You know, massive partnering with the business community to show that we will support a new airlines to come here. David Neilman, who's the founder of JetBlue, is the founder of Breeze. Every single regional airport in the country was courting him. He could have went anywhere he wanted to go, and yet he picked MacArthur. And it's huge, huge opportunity, huge development, huge accomplishment. Nowhere to be found in the state of the state. And if we're not celebrating those things on Long Island, what is it we could possibly do to get Albany to pay attention to us? Now, remember, every dollar we send to Albany from Long Island, we probably only get 70 or 80 cents back in state aid and support. So we're subsidizing all these other areas that they're promoting. So how about promoting us? How about promoting all the great accomplishments that we've done here? How about giving a shout out to Terry Alisi Maselli for leading the charge in the Long Island region through COVID and Supervisor Carpenter and her team for getting Breeze Airways to come here? Simple things to do in a state of a state. Things she had her finger on the pulse of, was involved in and dropped the ball. And I'm super disappointed with how Long Island got snubbed once again.
Great point. You know, founder, I mean, JetBlue, the head guy at JetBlue brings this alien. He's caught it all over. And we can't get any recognition from all, and that's a disgrace. I'm sorry. That is an absolute disgrace. And I'll tell you one thing. I'm really disappointed in Kathy Hochul. I really am. I mean, we're not even 6 months into her tenure, and I can't figure her out still. You know, she's got the Biden effect. You know, you go in, you get Lord left, okay? And that's what's happened. She was always a mod dem. I had her on all the time as lieutenant governor. All the time. I can't believe the seismic shift that has happened. I cannot believe, you know, with these ridiculous mandates in schools, you know, I mean, come on. Stop it already. Even the WHO opposes what she's doing. I can't figure her out. I can't figure her out. Regarding the students, the healthcare workers, these mandates with boosters. I mean, come on. Wake up already. Jeez. And I'll tell you, sad to see, she's got quite a lead. Quite a lead. But, you know, buyer beware. That's what I say to her, Joe. Buyer beware.
Yes, she will be the Democratic nominee. I mean, she's got $22 million in the bank, and she's doing a great job fundraising. And I happen to really like her and had a lot of high hopes for her, you know. But I'm reminded, you know, when I think of Governor Hochul, I'm reminded of that movie, The American President, where Michael Douglas played the president. He has a great line in it that I think a lot of elected officials should understand. And his line was, I was so busy trying to keep my job that I forgot to do my job, right? And I think that's exactly the pressure and the frenzy that elected officials have when they get into office, is they get in, and then their political operatives start telling them, you know, well, you need to make sure that you win New York City. You can't become governor unless you win New York City. And then all the pandering starts to try and make sure they're going to have votes down the road, irrespective of whether or not it's overall good, sound policy in general, and overall whether it's good, sound, long-term policy. So they get so wrapped up trying to keep their job that they forget to do their job. And I have to tell you, this is a watershed crescendo moment for Kathy Hochul. Okay, who am I? I'm nobody, right? I'm one vote. But I will tell you that if I was advising her, I would say, you know, You're the first governor in the state of New York. You haven't been elected yet. You know, you got it because you were lieutenant governor and the governor resigned. And you have an opportunity now to stand up at this moment in history where New York is in a major, major, major crisis across the board. New York City is hurting. New York City is really challenged. We have huge people abandoning the state in droves. And you have an opportunity to stand up and say, you know, I am going to lead this state, the whole state, through this, and we are going to be bigger and better if you elect me, and we are just going to make it great. And here are my moderate policies that are going to get there, because that's what we need. She would win, and she would go down in history as one of the greatest governors of New York, and she would be a Democratic presidential candidate if she's able to do that. That's how much I believe she could accomplish. Whether she does it or not, it's the same way Joe Biden could have accomplished a lot. Whether she does it or not is up to her, but I really feel she has that opportunity if she just stands up to the operatives and just says, you know what, I'm done trying to keep my job. I'm going to roll up my sleeves and I'm going to do my job.
Joe, but these people are like the Stepford wives, okay? They get into this office and I don't know what happens to them, okay? But they're not who they are. That we know of them, we should say. And it's the Biden effect. It's the pandering, and Hochul is getting ready for a primary in a couple of months. And that's what it's all about. Unfortunately, this becomes so political. You know what? You want to make a statement? Rehire the healthcare workers that you terminated with the silly mandates. Come on. Wake up. My goodness. Time for the lightning round, Joe. We only got a couple of minutes. I want to get to a couple of things quick. Regarding Supreme Court striking down OSHA a week and a half ago, the vaccine mandate enforcement for private employees, got the healthcare facilities, no brainer here. OSHA, you know what, overstepping bounds here. Biden tried every move that he could. every move that he could. Thank goodness we have a little common sense as far as this ruling here. Thank goodness, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, the Supreme Court got it right, and it's not about whether people support mandates or not. It's about what the law is. You know, OSHA is there to protect people from workforce hazards, some unique things, hazards that might happen at that particular workforce. So anybody that goes into a Home Depot sees that people who are going to be lifting wear back braces. If they're going to be using a lift, they got to put cones around it, all sorts of things, because in Home Depot, those are unique safety hazards that exist specifically because it's a Home Depot. What Biden tried to do, and I thought it was a brilliant argument. I didn't think it would work, but I thought it was a brilliant argument. I thought what they tried to do was say, you know, being in an office with COVID causes that to become a workplace hazard. And people could say, oh, yeah, that makes sense. It doesn't make sense. OSHA is there to make sure it's a specific thing. And that's why the delineation between healthcare providers can have a mandate, because it makes sense. You know, a healthcare facility is supposed to be promoting a healthy environment so people can get better. So if somebody's infected with a virus that works there, that is unique to a healthcare facility. It makes total sense when you think about it. But if somebody's in an accounting firm or working at a Home Depot or working at a 7-Eleven, you know, a virus is not unique to that workplace. And so I really thought that the Supreme Court got it right. I'm so tired of everybody trying to put mandates on employers. Why is it an employer's responsibility to go out of business because people aren't going to abide to a vaccine mandate? It's up to the federal government to do that and the state government to do that, not to employers. So I applaud the Supreme Court for getting it right.
Yeah. Joe, you know, this House committee investigating the Capitol riots now have issued subpoenas to Rudy Giuliani, other members of Trump's legal team. You know, to me, this is a bunch of nonsense, because if you look at the committee, I mean, they only have one way of looking at this from the political glasses that they're looking at, okay? And the problem here is, could somebody tell me why there were only 200 Capitol Police on board that day? Okay? The Capitol Police Department is one of the largest police departments in the country, combined. Okay? Detroit and St. Louis, I'm reading, do not equate to the Capitol Police Department. Yet we only had 200 members. Why so little? How about an investigation as far as the security of that thing? Why was there a lack of? Instead, we're pinpointing individuals. And listen, I understand it. I get it. But the crux of the problem is, why so little in the security arena? That's what I want to know. And nobody's addressing it. Nobody's addressing it, Joe.
You know, Jay, to me, there's this argument going on as to, was it an organized political insurrection or was it a protest that simply got out of hand, you know? And my answer is always that it was both, right? I don't believe at all that it was intended to be an armed insurrection and overthrow of the Capitol and of the government. I think there were various peaceful protesters there who didn't act like idiots, and there were idiots there who decided to storm the Capitol. The intent, though, is what we have to be concerned about, right? So everybody tries to say, oh, well, look, the BLM and protesters, why aren't they insurrectionists? You know, the intent there was on January 6th, was to stop the federal government from these people who stormed into the Capitol, was to stop the federal government and federal elected officials from doing their jobs under the Constitution. And that's why the word insurrection is used there. But I don't think these people were sophisticated enough to really even understand that that's what's being said about them. I think they're a bunch of idiots who are protesting and really got out of hand. But, you know, it is something that we need to watch. An insurrection is something that we need to do anything we can to prevent. And your point is 100% correct, which we've talked about, is why was there such a lack of security at the Capitol that day with all of those protesters there? That's the big question. I don't know. Maybe, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist by nature. Maybe we'll uncover that there was conspiring between Capitol Police and others. I don't think so. I just think they didn't think that would ever happen. I just think, you know, like everything else, like 9/11, you know, why was security so lax pre-9/11? Because we never suspected a 9/11 was going to occur. Why was there security lax there? Because we didn't suspect that these idiots were going to storm the Capitol. That's my feeling on it.
Joe, we're running out of time. I told you we had a lot on the plate today. And we didn't get to it all. But we'll do it next time for sure. I look forward to having you back in a few, my friend. Stay well, all right?
Thanks, Jay. You too. Be well.